20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Hope you guys had a great extended weekend. Thank you, as always, for being here. If you are enjoying the Pack-A-Day Podcast, whether on the audio side or over on YouTube, if you would be so kind as to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews, those things help the channel a ton, really get us some other opportunities to kind of get to the front of the list and more viewership. So again, if you would be so kind to do those things, that would be splendid. But as always, I more than anything, just appreciate you checking it out, and hopefully you are enjoying it. And it's just a daily dose of Green Bay Packers chat, which I know I need every day. So hopefully you guys are enjoying it as well. We do have Packers OTAs on Wednesday, and I will be in attendance watching. It is really our first Packers practice of the year. Yes, we had rookie mini camp, which was not really a practice. We got to see a little bit of Taylor Algirsma. That was about it. So really looking forward to this. This should be our first introduction to the free agents and the draft picks and really seeing what some of these players can do. No, there's not pads. We may not even get any real legitimate, you know, team competitive periods. Even if they are, they will be, you know, probably 50 to 75% speed. And again, with no pads on. So we'll have to take it with some grain of salt, but overall, just so excited to be back at Packers practice. Tomorrow we'll preview it. And then on Thursday, actually Wednesday night, I'll probably do a live Q&A. And then on Thursday, we'll kind of break it all down as well. So you can look forward to that later this week. Also, I want to ask you guys something. I don't do this a ton. I probably should do it a little bit more. You're going to probably have to comment that. I think on Spotify, you can comment. And then I think obviously on the YouTube channel, I know you can comment. But if you have the opportunity, let me know. I'm curious your thoughts on where the Jaire Alexander situation is at right now. And regardless of if you think he's back for sure or gone for sure or anything in between, we don't have a resolution. It's May 27th. Is it detrimental in any way that this is continuing to drag on? Is this something that the Packers, as we get now into actual OTAs these next 2 weeks and then mini camp the week after that, which is a mandatory mini camp, is there any real legitimate issue with this not being resolved at this point? Is it a distraction? Is just, if you are going to bring back Jaire, him not being at OTAs and mini camps, is that an issue or a problem? Does this potentially, again, you know, dissuade from maybe getting other corners that you might need if Jaire is gone? Is this reaching a point where it just needs a resolution one way or the other? Are we past that point? Or does this sort of remain smart on Brian Gutekunst's part, where patience is a virtue in this situation? Maybe other teams in other situations or in similar situations would say, hey, we want a resolution here. We're ready to be done with it. We're just going to cut him, or whatever that thing might be. We're just going to do that. Or it, like, again, does his patience potentially pay off? And maybe in a mini camp or an OTA or a training camp later down the road, some big time corner tears an ACL or an Achilles and he ends up being able to get a much bigger trade compensation for Jaire. Or maybe as time goes on, Jaire is willing to take a bigger pay cut. Or again, whatever that thing is, pay cut, or, you know, any sort of restructure of the contract, or whether it is a trade, is him being patient about it smarter? And again, a good, I guess, overall GMing, because he's not willing to rush it. He wants to get the best possible deal out of it from a Packers standpoint, and he's trying to do what's in the best interest of the Packers. I'm curious your thoughts. I lean towards, I think patience is worth it at this point. I think I lean a little bit in that direction. I personally would just love to have it done, just because I want to know where this is going to lead, what's going to happen here. And I think it would just be nice to either move on or see Jaire back, whatever that thing is. I would love to just know. But from a GM standpoint, I lead towards, hey, be as patient as you want. There's no deadline on this thing up until the start of the regular season. So take as much time as you need. But it is interesting. I would love to hear your thoughts on that, on if you think this is good, bad, or indifferent. and you know, just what Goody should do in this situation. Is it time? Is it time to just make a decision one way or the other? I'm curious your thoughts on that. Our main topic for today is going to be Packers that trended up or trended down at the end of last season. I haven't really had the opportunity to dig into this too much, and I forget who it was. There was somebody either in a comment on YouTube or in a live Q&A. I forget which one it was, and I forget the person, so my apologies on this. But somebody asked me and said, hey, if you go look at Evan Williams' PFF grades, you know, he started the season great, but then by the end of the year really fell off, and is that reason for concern? And it just kind of reminded me of like, yeah, usually around either the end of season or at this point, I kind of take a look at who is trending up to end the season and who is trending down and what we can sort of glean from that, if anything. So today we're going to be taking a look at a variety of different Packers, and I'm going to go from the ones that trended the worst to the ones that trended the best at the end of last year. All right. So we're going to go from worst case scenario to best case scenario, and we'll go through it one by one. There's a variety of Packers we're going to talk about. Some we're going to try to explain a little bit. Others, it's just going to be observation. I'm going off of my personal grades. For those who don't know, I grade every player on every play. I've done it for like, I don't know, 8 or 9 years now. I don't even know what it is anymore. I think it was 2017. So maybe it was, you know, 7 or 8 years at this point. Either way, grade every player on every play. I track that through the course of the season. And I see, again, I'm able to tell which players trended up, trended down, etc. So we'll start with the worst one, the one that trended down the most at the end of last year. Now, the good news is this one's a little bit wonky slash a small sample size. And I'm glad we're just getting this one out of the way, because I think both of the plus and the minus are too much of a small sample size to really base anything off of. But it was semi-noteworthy nonetheless, so I'm including it in here. And again, I'm glad that we can just kind of get it over with to begin with. But Brenton Cox had a negative 0.92 per game swing at the end of last year. Now, in his first six games, all right, Brenton Cox in his first six games had a plus 1.30 grade for me, an average of 0.22 per game. It's a good grade. It's a very solid edge defender. And he was really looking like, oh my goodness, maybe Green Bay really found something here. And then in his final two games, again, very small sample size, right? His final two games, he had a negative 1.40 grade. Basically, not only wiping out the entire plus 1.30, but actually putting him as a slight negative for the season. Now, it is semi-noteworthy that in those final two games, he played the most snaps that he did of any game. It was not by much at all. It was like a few extra snaps in both of those games, but it was the two games that he played the most. I would probably chalk this up to one of those games being Philadelphia, and Philadelphia having one of the best offensive lines in football. That's a really tough matchup. Those tackles in Philly, Jordan Mailata, Lane Johnson, are really freaking good. That's probably the biggest thing here, and it probably is, again, just a small enough sample size. But to go from a plus 1.30 grade in your first six games to a negative 1.4 in those final two is quite the swing, a negative 2.7 swing. And just if you look at it, right, if Brenton Cox is the player that's plus 0.2 every game, that's a good edge defender. Maybe not quite, you know, high-end starter, but like you can play with that player quite a bit and be pretty excited about their overall production. If they're a negative 0.7 per game, you're basically unrosterable. You should not probably be playing, or you should be very end of the roster, you know, just break glass in case of emergency sort of situation. So those were two very different Brenton Cox scenarios. Hopefully, again, the last one was just went against some very good offensive tackles, got beat up a little bit. It is what it is. Well, I'm very interested to see where Brenton Cox trends to start next year. Of course, he's going to have to make the 53 first. We talked about those roster battles the other day. But that's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on. But again, very, very small sample size, so I don't want to put too much into the Brenton Cox one. The next one is not going to surprise you at all. It is probably the one that was most talked about and most noteworthy through the course of last season, and that was Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed, over his first 12 games, was plus 8.25. was trending as one of the best Packers on the team, period. At plus 0.69 per game, that is a very good grade. Over his final six games, he had a total of plus 0.5, averaging plus 0.08 per game. That is a difference of 0.61 per game in the negative. So he was averaging 0.69 per game at the beginning in those first 12 games, only 0.08 in the final six games. Season was cruising along. Reed looked exactly like himself. He looked like the playmaker he was the year before, maybe even taking a step in the right direction. And then those final six games hit a legitimate wall and just was not himself. The reason for that, he did have some injuries through the course of the season, got a little bit banged up. It felt like, of course, the drops last year were a much bigger issue, and how he deals with that and how he kind of bounces back is going to be massive. The difference between those Jaden Reeds could not have been more stark. Now, the great news is we have a full rookie season plus the first 12 games of last year, which were really fantastic football from Jaden Reed. And we have a very small six-game sample size where it was worse by a significant margin, but even those were graded as a slight positive. So we're not talking about the end of the world here where he went from a superstar to just completely unplayable or anything like that. He just went from being, again, one of the highest graded players on the team to very pedestrian by the end of the year. Again, how he bounces back is going to be massive for Green Bay. I have no doubt that he can. I really believe that he is still a big time player for Green Bay. And I think the entire offense kind of stalled out a little bit towards the end of last year. Hopefully that was a piece of it, but Green Bay is going to need Jaden Reed to bounce back in a significant way. We'll be right back. Next up is the one that kind of brought this conversation on to begin with. As we mentioned, that was Evan Williams. Evan Williams in his first nine games, a plus 2.85 grade, for plus 0.32 per game. Evan Williams in his final four games, negative 1.05 grade and negative 0.26 per game, a difference of 0.58, again, trending in the wrong direction. You guys know, I love Evan Williams. I think he's a stud. I think he's a big time player. I think he is, you know, him next to Xavier McKinney is going to be the safety duo for the foreseeable future, but it is noteworthy. What I would probably chalk this up to is that rookie wall. And it's right around that time, right? Plays those first nine games. Did have some injuries as well, but those first nine games, everything's going well. Hits that rookie wall. The final four didn't quite play up to the same standard and actually had a negative grade through that point in time. I think the tackling can get a little bit more consistent. I think that would certainly help him out a little bit. There were a couple plays where he maybe just wasn't, you know, in the right spot at the right time. But overall, again, still very bullish on Evan Williams, and I'm hopeful that it was just a little bit of a rookie wall and he comes back and bounces back in a big way. I very much believe that he will, but just something to keep an eye on. We've seen maybe some of these rookies that have had these beginning streaks that they look good, and then they hit a wall, and then their second year is that decline, right? I don't think that's going to be the case with Evan Williams, but that's a big difference between plus 2.85 to negative 1.05. So we'll see how he, again, kind of bounces back, just like Jaden Reed, hopefully, in 2025. The next one is very explainable, but it's somewhat noteworthy nonetheless. Xavier McKinney, in his first 11 games, had a plus 5.90 grade. In his final seven games, had only a plus 0.7 grade. So he went from plus 0.54 per game to plus 0.1 per game. A couple things here. Number one, he was off to an unbelievable start with all the interceptions and the big plays that he made, right? I think the bigger thing here is in those final seven games, teams did not throw at Xavier McKinney or really even look in his direction. They did not give him the ability to kind of make those big plays. And I think we saw the result of that. I thought he still was playing sound football. I don't think he was doing anything wrong. I think it was almost a lack of opportunities more than anything else. But what's noteworthy here is it also coincides with Evan Williams taking that dip as well. And again, you're probably looking where Xavier McKinney is not. So that's going to put Evan Williams in the corners in a little bit more compromising situations, potentially, because teams are looking to stay away from Xavier McKinney. And for Xavier McKinney, and maybe even more so for Jeff Hafley, you've got to try to find a way to put him in scenarios where he can still be successful, even when teams are trying to avoid him. Maybe that's playing him up in the box more. Maybe that's using him as a blitzer, whatever that thing might be, to not just have him patrolling the secondary in a spot where he's not going to be able to maybe make some of those big plays. So I think that's going to be paramount for both McKinney and Jeff Hafley, is to try to put him in, you know, positions to be successful no matter what, and hopefully get him a little bit closer to the ball so he can still make some of those big plays. Next one is Javon Bullard. It's again, these safeties, right? First 12 games, plus 1.65 grade, plus 0.14 per game. In his final four games, negative 1.10 for negative 0.28 per game, difference of negative 0.42 per game overall from the first 12 games to the last four. Again, small-ish sample size over the last four, but I think we saw that happen. And I think it's unfortunate because I think those last four games are really what kind of people are going off of for Javon Bullard. It's weird that it's not that way for Evan Williams, really, but it is that way for Bullard. And I think the big thing here is just him moving back and forth, him going from safety to corner, corner to safety, and even sometimes mid-game. That's a lot to put on a player's plate. The first thing I'll say is the fact that Green Bay trusted him with that responsibility in and of itself was a huge compliment to Javon Bullard. A lot of times rookies don't even get, you know, one position consistently as a rookie. He was given multiple and even again had to switch between it in an individual game. And I think that while complimentary to him that he can do it, I definitely think it affected him where he got to play these different positions, but he never really got to master either. And I'm really interested to see how they utilize him this year. I believe he's a safety more than a slot player. There's no opening at safety at the moment. Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney are going to probably be patrolling that deep, you know, secondary for the foreseeable future. So you probably need to get him in that slot position. And if he's there, I think he can play it, but I think you need to master him then at that position. Try to get him to lock in a little bit more. He's probably going to be in that big nickel when you go two corners on the outside, a safety in the slot, two safeties behind. You're more of your nickel against like 12 personnel, right? Something like that. I think you're going to see Bullard in the slot. I just hope he can kind of master that a little bit more and maybe not have to switch between two positions as much. Still think there is a very, very good player in Javon Bullard. Next up, Sean Ryan. First seven games, plus 2.90 grade. In his last 11 games, negative 0.15. So he went from pretty much a plus player over his first seven games to pretty neutral over his last 11. Now, that's not bad. If you're neutral, you're still solid. You're not losing the team games, things like that, but you're not helping the team win. Over his first seven games, he was legitimately helping the team win. That was a big swing for him. Now, if you look at Ryan, there was some ebb and flow throughout the course of the year, but it definitely was better in those first seven than it was in the last 11. And it sort of explains what they're doing, right? They, of course, still have Jordan Morgan, who was supposed to rotate with him last year and maybe even be the starter. And now they bring in Anthony Belton as well. Maybe John Williams gets involved in that conversation. We'll see. But they are going to have competition for Rashid Walker and Sean Ryan. And I think rightfully so. And I liked Sean Ryan last year. I thought he had a really a season that was a step in the right direction, which he's done year over year over year now. Rookie year was a disaster. Second year started as a mess, and then he finally got some rotational snaps at the end. And then last year, I thought, was his best season yet, where he was pretty much a full-time starter and really managed it well, but did hit a little bit of a wall, and now he's going to have to show a little bit more consistency if he wants to keep that job in 2025. Next one is maybe one of the most interesting ones, and I'm not sure I would have guessed it, but it's noteworthy nonetheless. Zach Tom, first 11 games, plus 4.70 grade. He was cruising. He was crushing it. Packers' best offensive lineman. He looked at everything that we would have expected out of Zach Tom, right? In his final seven games, he had a plus 0.55 grade. Not bad, right? Still graded in the positive. It's not the worst case scenario in the world. But that goes from a plus 0.43 grade per game to a plus 0.08. Again, that is a big-time plus player to a neutral-level player. And Green Bay cannot have Zach Tom playing as close to a neutral-level player. They need him to be the ace of that offensive line, the stud, the guy that does not allow pressure. At the end of last year, he was a little bit shakier than we had maybe seen him. And I think we could make the argument here of what shakier is. Again, I want to reemphasize he's still graded in the positive. We're not talking about a negative player here, but you would see him get bull rushed from time to time. I thought he struggled in that final player or the playoff game against the Philadelphia Eagles, which kudos to the Eagles. They have a great pass rushing defensive line. But I thought there were some moments where he wasn't quite up to the level that you would have expected from him. And I think that really kind of shows out in the way that he was graded throughout the course of the season. Still a very good grade on the year. Plus, what, 5.25 on the year, one of the highest graded Packers. And those first 11 games aren't nothing. He graded insanely well. And those last seven games, still graded in the positive. But there was a dip in his overall grading, and it's just noteworthy nonetheless. Two more negatives. The next one is Kingsley Enagbare in his first nine games, plus 0.5 grade. Not great, but a serviceable rotational fourth defensive end, right? Plus 0.06 per game. It's nothing to write home about, but it's a positive grade. And that's not nothing either. And if your fourth defensive end is still putting up positive numbers, you're totally cool with that. You're fine with that. You can put him in. He's not going to hurt you. He's not going to be a game breaker for you, but he's going to break even and it's not going to be the end of the world. That's exactly what you kind of want from a fourth edge rusher. But in his final nine games of the season, had a negative 2.35 grade, good for negative 0.26 per game. And that's a totally different story. Now you're looking at, you know, you're probably trying to find a replacement for Kingsley Enagbare. Welcome to the team, Baron Sorrell. Welcome to the team, Colin Oliver. And this is why I've said Kingsley Enagbare, his cap number went up to over $3 million this year because of the performance escalators. That's a bigger contract. I think he probably does have a little bit of trade value. And now you potentially have a defensive end room that includes Rashawn Gary, LVN, you know, Baron Sorrell, Colin Oliver, and Brenton Cox. And I think you could make an argument that if Oliver and Sorrell look good, you might have five defensive ends better than Kingsley Enagbare. If that's the case, do you want to keep him around on the final year of his deal at over $3 million, or do you want to see if you can get something in return for him? I did not like the way that he ended last season. I still like Enagbare. I think there's a player there, but if you get to the point where you like the rest of your ends and you don't want to pay him $3 million, I could see Green Bay maybe trying to get a conditional pick in return if that's the sort of deal that they could get. Last but not least, Elgton Jenkins. It's not a major move here, but plus 3.10 over his first 11 games. And in those final seven, just plus 0.2. So plus 0.28 per game in the first 11 games, plus 0.03 over the final seven. Change of negative 0.25 per game. Again, you know, pretty significant difference, especially when you start counting up that there are three offensive linemen on this list. Three starting offensive linemen. Zach Tom hit a wall at the end. Sean Ryan got worse towards the end. Elgton Jenkins got worse towards the end. That's not great. You want those guys playing the best football at the end, and these three were not. And that's gonna add up. And you want to talk about Jordan being at his best? You need your offensive linemen to be at their best. You need your receivers to be at their best. And Jenkins and Tom and Ryan were not, nor was Jaden Reed, and it catches up with you. It makes you not as productive of an offense. So for those three offensive linemen, Ryan especially, if he wants to earn a starting job, but Zach Tom and Elgton Jenkins, they need to be at their peak performance, especially when it matters most. Same thing for Jaden Reed. There's some opportunity for growth and improvement there. I think it starts along the offensive line, but certainly Jaden Reed, a piece of that as well. All right, now we get to talk about the players trending up, which of course is much more fun. The least of which we're going to talk about first is Rashawn Gary. Again, nothing significant here, but through his first eight games, just a plus 0.3 grade, pretty much a neutral level grade. In his final 10 games, he had a plus 1.8 grade, so plus 0.18 per game. It's significant enough where it matters to the point where if he can be doing just a little bit better per game, it's going to help out the defense in a pretty significant way. Now, Rashawn has had much better years even than that plus 0.18 that he had over the last 10 games of the season. And he can play much better than that. And Green Bay needs that version of Rashawn Gary that's better than that. But at least there was some signs of him being better in the final 10 games than he was in the first eight, because those first eight were about as pedestrian as you could possibly get. Next player, same basic thing, LVN. In his first 10 games, had a negative 0.95 grade, for about negative 0.1 per game. Again, slight negative grade, nothing terrible, but certainly not what you're hoping for. In his final eight games, he had a plus 0.55 grade. Say it once again, this is nothing to write home about. This is less than a plus 0.1 per game. It's basically a neutral level player. So you're going from slight negatives to slight positives. Not nothing, but not a ton either. What I was hoping for is we saw some big time growth for LVN at the end of the year, that we saw signs of legitimate improvement and all of a sudden he was setting the world on fire. That did not take place, but we did see some small signs. He did get a little bit better as the season went along and did play some of his best football at the end of the year. Now, whether that's, you know, first round pick good, it was not. Whether that can show signs that he can be first round top 15 pick good, that remains to be seen, but it was at least better he was at least much more serviceable at the end of the year and was a player that when you put him on the field was a net positive. And that's something. Now, can he take a step from there? Next up is Dontayvion Wicks. In his first 10 games, had a plus 0.15 grade. I mean, plus 0.02 per game, just very disappointing. Basically a net neutral player, wasn't helping in any way despite all the opportunities he was given. Now, over his final 8 games, he had a plus 1.65 grade, good for plus 0.21 per game. However, in 2023, he had a plus 6.75 grade over 17 games, which was good for plus 0.4 per game. So even in the final stretch of 8 games, it was still about half as good as he did in 2023 combined. So there was still a dip in productivity for Dontayvion Wicks, but if he hits that 0.21 per game that he was playing at the final 8 games of the season, he would have ended at a plus 3.75 and still would have been Green Bay's second highest ranked wide receiver this past year. So it was definitely better. Wasn't great. Wasn't spectacular. We saw a better version of him as a rookie. What we need to see from Dontayvion Wicks in year 3 is closer to that rookie productivity and hopefully even a little bit better. We'll be right back. Next up is Josh Jacobs. This one is, again, a little bit interesting to kind of go over. In his first 7 games, he still had a plus 3.85 grade, which is really good. Good for plus 0.55 per game. But in the final 11 games, had a plus 9.0 grade, good for plus 0.82 per game. It was just a massive grade no matter what. It was the highest graded player on the season and was also somebody that even was playing better down the stretch. Those final 11 games looked like massively impressive. I don't know if it was quite, 2022 Josh Jacobs, but it was still phenomenal Josh Jacobs. And he got stronger as the season went along. And we've talked about this before. This is a player who knows how to ramp up as the season goes along. Thought in training camp, I was like, he kind of looks a little pedestrian. And then you got to the week 1 of the regular season. All right, there's Josh. And then it just got better and better and better and better. He just kept playing his best football as the season went along. And it was indicated for sure in his grades as well. Next up is Romeo Doubs. This is a bit of an interesting one. In his first 10 games, had a plus 1.55 grade, plus 0.16 per game. In his final 4 games, Romeo Doubs had a plus 2.0 grade, good for plus 0.5 per game. That would have put him, if he could have stayed at that plus 0.5 level, that would have put him at plus 8.50 for the season and would have been their third highest graded offensive player. We started to see the Romeo Doubs that we saw the previous year at the end of last year in those final 4 games. Paramount for Romeo Doubs, especially goes into a contract year, that he can continue to play at that level. And thankfully, again, at the end of the year, he did. Remember, the end of the year before in 2023, he stepped up huge in those playoff games as well and looked like a legitimate breakout candidate. So I don't know, maybe just Romeo's a end of season, productivity merchant, which is fine. You need guys to step up big at the end of the season and in the playoffs. Romeo Doubs did that again this year. Hopefully he can put together a whole year that looks like that final stretch did this past season. Next up is Rashid Walker. For the second consecutive season, he played much better at the end of the year than he did at the beginning of the year. In his first 8 games, negative 2.45 grade, good for negative 0.31 per game. In his final 10 games, Rashid Walker had a plus 0.85 grade. Nothing again major here, plus 0.09 per game, but that is a massive improvement. I cannot tell you the difference between a negative 0.3 grade per game and a plus 0.1 grade basically per game is a massive swing. Offensive line, as we've talked about, along with corner, is a weakest link position. If you have a weak link, teams will exploit it. And if players are just producing at a positive level, which Walker did at the end of last season through his final 10 games, that's just such a huge, your floor is raised because you don't have that weak link. You don't have somebody that's consistently playing in the negative. I think that's what we saw. Again, second consecutive year that he did that. But for the second consecutive year, we haven't seen consistent Rashid Walker for 17 games. That's why Jordan Morgan, potentially Anthony Belton, are going to be fighting it out with him for that spot. We'll see if Walker can hold off his competition. Next is Kenny Clark. This is a very positive sign. It's still not to the level that we've seen from Kenny in the past, but Through his first 11 games, Kenny had a negative 1.85 grade, negative 0.17 per game. And in his final seven games, he had a plus 1.75 grade, good for plus 0.25 per game. If he could have maintained that plus 0.25 per game for the entire season, he would have had a plus 4.25 grade, which would have been the Packers' third highest defensive player this past year. It felt like as the season went along, he got a bit more comfortable in Jeff Hafley's defense, started to play a bit more like himself. Was it prime Kenny Clark? It was not. Was it much better than it was earlier in the season? Absolutely. So hopefully he understands the defense a little bit better, knows what he's supposed to do, and can carry that over into 2025. Because that version of Kenny Clark that we saw in the final seven games was much more productive, and we saw just a better version of it than what we saw earlier in the season. And he is such a huge, important piece. I've talked about in the past so many times as defense goes, as Kenny goes. It's probably not to that level anymore just because he doesn't have the same, you know, just sort of force multiplying ability that he's maybe had in the past as a legit star in this league, but still. Really good Kenny Clark, which we saw again closer to really good Kenny Clark at the end of last year, would be a huge step in the right direction. Would just completely change the way that I think Jeff Hafley could play defense with his players. Next is Keyshawn Nixon, which is not going to be a surprise to most. In his first 10 games, negative 1.85 grade. In his final eight games, plus 1.85 grade. So negative 0.19 over the first 10 games, or plus 0.23 over the final eight games. This coincides, of course, with him playing more and more on the outside, getting more and more comfortable with it, and really sort of finding his, I think, final home as a defensive back. We'll see if he continues to work on special teams. He might get some time in the slot here or there. He just, quite frankly, looked better as an outside corner. And if you look at his athletic profile, right, where he struggled in his athletic profile was with his agility testing. And if you have a straight line speed corner who struggles with agility, slot's usually not the place for that person. You got to be able to flip your hips and change directions because you have two-way goes all over the place. Usually that athletic profile for Nixon does not fit the slot very well. Now, he did an admirable job with it, all things considered, and he can tackle well and blitz off the edge and he can do some of the other things. He's got good ball skills, but we're now seeing him, I think, play a position that fits his athletic profile better. And we're starting to see a much better version of Keyshawn Nixon because of it. I don't expect him to go anywhere. I think he's staying on the outside. And I think that was a real positive change for Keyshawn. Next is another one that's not going to surprise anyone. That's Edgerrin Cooper. In his first 10 games, had a plus 1.75 grade, good for plus 0.17 per game. Good, solid number, especially as a rookie, especially as an off-ball linebacker. That's a really, really good grade. Then he missed three games with an injury and came back over his final five games and put up a plus 3.05 grade, good for plus 0.61 per game, a change of plus 0.44 in the positive. Had he continued at that plus 0.61 rate for the entire season, he would have been plus 10.37, good for best defensive player on the team. A massive breakout to end the season in a player that I think is trending in all the best directions and should be ready for a massive 2025. And last but not least, another linebacker, Quay Walker. First nine games, negative 3.45 grade, a negative 0.38 grade per game. And at the end of that nine games, I said in a video and in thankfully Tyler, of course, made it into a YouTube short. I said at the time, I think I'm done with the Quay Walker experience. I just think, you know, we were in year three. We saw three seasons of starting Quay Walker. There had been no signs of improvement. And it was literally at that mark, that exact mark at nine games in, negative 3.45, just not playing great football. And then immediately following that, and in his final five games of the season, he had a plus 1.25 grade, good for a plus 0.25 grade per game. The difference there is plus 0.63 from the beginning of the season to the end of the season per game. I mean, just a massive swing. And I thought played two or three of the best games of his entire career in the middle of that. That was a difference-making Quay Walker. And if that can continue, especially with what we saw from Edgerrin Cooper, I'm not saying it's going to. I'm not saying I expect it to. But if those two play like they did at the end of last year, in their final five games, they will make up one of, if not the best linebacker duo in the NFL. a lot of work to be done to keep that consistent. And again, I'm not saying I'm predicting it, but what we saw at the end of the year from those two linebackers was some pretty special stuff together. And I really hope, I'm hoping that the loss of linebackers coach Anthony Campanelli does not affect them, because he got them playing, I think, the best football, well, obviously of Adrian Cooper's career, it's his first year, but certainly of Quay Walker's career. And they look pretty special together at times. So I'm really hoping that that can be the case again this year, and that we don't see any sort of dip in Quay Walker or Adrian Cooper, any of those players that we saw take steps in the right direction towards the end of last year. All right, so just to recap really quick, players that trended down: Brenton Cox, Jaden Reed, Evan Williams, Xavier McKinney, Javon Bullard, Sean Ryan, Zach Tom, Kingsley Enagbare, and Elton Jenkins. Green Bay is going to need them all to bounce back. And players that trended up: Rashawn Gary, LVN, Dontavian Wicks, Josh Jacobs, Romeo Doubs, Rashid Walker, Kenny Clark, Keyshawn Nixon, Adrian Cooper, and Quay Walker. It's fun. It's fun to look at, and it's going to be really fun to see which ones continue to trend that way and which ones maybe take a step back or a bigger step forward. Those will all be things to kind of keep track of as we start the 2025 campaign. And when we get closer to the season and get kind of a first quarter or maybe even 6 weeks worth of grades, we'll definitely take a look at it again to see if any of those trends continued one way or the other. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I always appreciate you guys a ton. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members: Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Conner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkle-Stinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Store, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Cast. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.